The Buffalo News Ice Time podcast is brought to you by Express Windows. Windows starting at $359 installed. Visit expresswindowsinc.com.
Welcome to Ice Time, the Buffalo News Hockey Podcast. I'm Lance Lysowski, the Sabres beat writer for the Buffalo News, joined by Mike Harrington, our columnist, who is phoning in, dispatched in, whatever you want to call it. Mike, you're in Calgary. You've already been in Seattle and Vancouver. By far my favorite trip on this beat are those four cities. You're going to be on to Edmonton after this. And you've already experienced so much, Mike. What an eventful two games you've already covered. We've got you got a few of those too. This isn't your first trip where it just seems like there's calamity all over the place. So you got the loss in Seattle. Lindy Ruff wasn't very happy about that game. I do not blame him one bit. 6-4 loss, but they lost. They seemingly lost every battle, and that's what drove Lindy crazy. They weren't around the net. They weren't doing all the little things that are going to help you win games. I know that people were upset about Devin Levi's performance in that game. Personally, Mike, I really have a difficult time nitpicking his performance with the way the rest of the team played, right?
No. I don't care a bit how Levi played. He wasn't great on goals 4 and 5.
Yeah.
When the game blew up for grabs. I get it. But that game was all about the lack of competitiveness in front of Devin Levi, the first period especially. Guys just getting pushed off the puck all the time, winning no battles down low. How about Owen Power getting completely overwhelmed at his own blue line by Oliver Bjorkstrand? It turns into a 2-on-0 that Levi has to make a save. That play was almost symptomatic of Power's season. And then you look at it, and with a minute 21 to go, the Sabres are down by a goal.
Yep.
And they pull the goalie. It's Tuck scores. It's 5-4. And they lose the battle off the faceoff, and the puck's in their empty net.
And Lindy Ruff, his comments after the game were more compelling or interesting than almost anything that happened on the ice, right?
Yeah, they really were. I mean, you and I actually had this conversation briefly last week. When you look at the third period stats and you really try to dissect it, and you say to yourself, why does this team blow so many leads? Why is their second and third period goal differential worse than anyone in the league except Chicago? And we wondered about conditioning, you know, but you say to yourself, how are, you know, NHL athletes not in condition to play a 60-minute game? And you say to yourself, that's probably a silly stab in the dark. And then the coach drops the bomb after the Seattle game, talking about how he wonders if conditioning is a factor with this club, because another good start. Seattle was 6 games in a row they scored first. Vancouver is now 7 games in a row that they've scored first. And you get to the third period, and they become inept. They don't drive the net. They don't get many shots on goal. They give up so many goals. And Lindy brought that up. So then what happens the next day? You never have a morning skate after a back-to-back. You never do. With travel. Okay. So, you know, a personal behind the scenes pull the curtain back, me till 2:30 in the morning to get to Vancouver from Seattle. I had a few issues with the train travel. I should have been there about 9:30 at night Pacific time. It took till about 2:30 in the morning to get there. So I'm thinking, what's the big deal? I'll be able to sleep in a little bit. The phone rings about 8:30 in the morning from Sabres PR. Hey, just so you know, we're skating this morning. When the first thing, when the phone rings and it's Sabres PR, I'm thinking, oh, is this the trade call? But no, it was we're skating at 11:30 this morning. What is up with this?
Lindy dragged you out of bed, and he dragged all the players out of bed.
That's what he did.
If you were upset, imagine their reaction.
They didn't see that coming, but they had their morning meeting.
And yeah.
Lindy made the point to say that it was a very pointed morning meeting. So he got in their grill about the way the Seattle game went and said, you're going on the ice. So we walk in to Rogers Arena, and they're already going. And then I'm talking battle drills, 2-on-2, and Lindy's pounding the stick on the ice. And it only lasted about half an hour, 25, 30 minutes, but it was a practice. It was not a morning skate where guys are just shooting some pucks, making some passes, making some line rushes, maybe practicing the power play. There was none of that. It was hit each other, get down low, two on two, who's going to score, who's going to keep the puck. I haven't seen that like easily 15 years. The last time Lindy was coach, probably he did it a couple times. He just had had enough.
And it's interesting. He had told us throughout the season at different times that he gave this group the benefit of the doubt. He tried to be patient. He tried not to be as hard or as demanding as maybe he was in New Jersey. I don't know if our listeners will remember, but it was over a year ago at this point. Lindy really bag skated the Devils. And it was one of those skates where the reporters were taking videos. There was a lot of talk on social media like, ooh, Lindy Ruff is not happy with his team. Well, he's back into that mode. And it's got to be very frustrating. And he's told us it's been hilarious when reporters have asked him straightforward, how frustrating is it? Well, what do you think, you know? And because, like, you think back to last week, he calls their performance in some ways embarrassing. Mm-hmm. They have a goalie score a goal against them on Friday night, Mike, and they still come out in Seattle. The team got there a day early, so there's no excuse for time change, whatever. No excuse to have that type of performance. So you knew that he was going to hold them accountable in some way, shape, or form.
And he had actually in Seattle at practice Sunday, the guys were laughing. They were upbeat about it. He skated them. They were doing sprints the last 10 minutes of practice. You know, I even clipped a little video. We put it on BuffaloNews.com. We haven't seen a lot of sprints at the end of practice this year. There were sprints at the end of practice in Seattle. So that was kind of a message from the Pittsburgh game too. And then you come out and play as poorly as they did in Seattle. Lindy just had enough. And it translated to a very, very, very strong first period in Vancouver. They were actually winning battles all over the ice. And you say to yourself, where has this team been?
They are capable of so much more than what they've done in the standings. We know about the holes in the roster. They're apparent. They're obvious every time we watch this team game in and game out. But, Mike, they should be winning a lot more than they are. You look at the first period, the first period goals, scoring first, what their record is, leading after one, what their record is. And that is what has made this season so confounding to Lindy Ruff. And it's made it confounding to the players, too. Like, they're the last place in the East, despite scoring first as often as they are, having a lot of skill in this lineup, the offseason changes to the roster, the goaltending's been inconsistent, but also this team, Mike, they're detailed defensively. It just wavers, right? You can point this, and you can't blame systems. Like, there's only so many ways you play in your D zone in the NHL. You play man-to-man, you play hybrid, or you play zone. You know, Sabres play a combination of zone and man. It's a hybrid system. It's very easy to know who your guy is, yet you continue to see this team lose track of their guy in the D zone and lose battles. And this isn't just young kids losing battles, Mike. It's guys who've been in the league for 5 to 7 years.
Veterans do it all the time. You know, you look at 30 of the 47 games they've scored first. They've only won 14 of those 30 games. If you score first in 30 games, you should win about 20. And they have just frittered away points here left and right. Their details are not good. Their details were very good last night in Vancouver. You know, right up until the last 6-on-5 play, the last 3 seconds, Lukanen had to make a couple saves. Other than that, they were in control of the 6-on-5 for once. There was no panic in their game. You felt like, even though it was a one-goal game, that was the first 6-on-5 in months that I felt they're going to wrap this thing up and get this thing in the garage. And it almost ended up in the back of their net anyway in the last 3 seconds. But you just had a different feeling last night. There was a certain intensity that has been missing.
Yeah, it was even better than the one against Carolina, which, of course, they were more aggressive in that one, Krebs and Quinn in particular. But that game on Tuesday night, a lot more complete, bounce-back game from Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. This team, again, they always find a way to make it interesting in the end. This trip started very interesting. Like, onto our second topic.
Don't wait months for new windows on your home. Express Windows can have them installed in just weeks with high-quality double-hung windows starting at only $359. Call Express Windows for a free at-home estimate or stop by our showroom on Delaware Avenue in Tonawanda.
As you're flying out to Seattle, we find out Devin Levi's coming up. Ryan McLeod goes on IR, and McLeod going to IR is no small story. He had been their top center the last week or so. He had finally being promoted to the top line. He was showing yet again what he can bring offensively to this team, the playmaking, attacking the middle of the ice. He goes down, lower body injury. Yuri Kulik comes back from injured reserve, and he looked like their best center these past 2 days, didn't he?
Did you ever have Yuri Kulik, number one center, on your 2024-25 Sabres bingo card? Is that even in the realm of possibility? Of
course. I thought they would bring him along on the wing, but it became apparent to Lindy Ruff, Yuri Kulik, and everybody else in this organization after about a few weeks that once they gave Kulik an opportunity at center, he is so much better down the middle of the ice than he is on the wing. He uses his speed. And the big difference over the past several weeks, we can eliminate the time that he missed, the short amount of time he missed with the injury, is playmaking. He knows what to do with the puck once he enters the offensive zone. He's finding open players. He's getting into the front of the net, and he's using his shot. And he was around the net on three of those. Right, he wins the faceoff on the Thompson goal. He's around the net on his own goal. He's creating on the Peterka goal. So his imprint was all over that win in Vancouver.
And he was their best player in Seattle, too. He had a tremendous number of scoring chances. He could have given them an even bigger lead in the first period. Now, one of the things he has to learn, obviously, and even Thompson was joking with him yesterday about, shooting the puck in the goalie's stomach. This is not the AHL. Just because you have a clear shot, you're not going to score. You're going to have to pick a corner here, son. And, he'll learn that. He'll learn how to score more at this level. But he's setting up plays. He's going to the front of the net. He's going to the dirty areas. He's winning faceoffs. And all of a sudden, you say to yourself, okay, Yuri Kulik, Tage Thompson's on the wing now, Dylan Cousins, Ryan McLeod when he comes back. What do you do with this lineup? Tage Thompson looks very comfortable on the wing right now. You've paid him $7.1 million to be your number one center.
That's not a bad number for a first-line right wing either. So if he ends up being there, it's all right, yeah.
Maybe that's the thing. Maybe you are going to get your first line right winger at 7.1 and Kulik's going to be your center, still on his entry level deal. But you're right. I think the biggest headline note of these two games so far on this trip is the emergence of Yuri Kulik as a dependable number one center in the NHL at 20 years old.
Impressive that he's made an impact not only with really young line mates, but he's able to step up, and you put him between, Zucker and Thompson, or last night it was Peterka and Thompson, doesn't matter. He doesn't look overwhelmed. And it's interesting thinking back to my conversations with people in Prague who know him, who worked with him over the summer, and they had spoken about wait until the Sabres put him on a line with an experienced player like Tage Thompson and see the confidence come. And that's all that he needed. Somebody a little bit older, somebody who in between shifts can guide him a little bit. We know that Zucker played that role and really helped mentor Kulik earlier in the season. And he thinks the world of Tage Thompson. He spent the summer trying to model some of his game around Tage, the shot, the way that he uses his skating in the middle of the ice. So it is a very significant development that not only is he able to survive in the NHL right now at his age, but Mike, he's making a significant impact. And the offense, the production's going to be there consistently, especially once he starts making an impact on the power play on a regular basis. We forget about that. I mean, you can't rely on even strength just to have all your offense come from. Once he starts putting the puck in the back of the net on the power play, this guy's going to be a legit top six player on this team.
Yeah, and look at the impact last night of J.J. Peterka as we move on. That was the best game J.J. Peterka has played maybe all season. The impact in the last 10 minutes, he clearly assisted on the tying goal. He scores the winning goal. He was at the front of the net again. And Yuri Kulik was there to set him up. And J.J. Peterka has just been too much of a perimeter player this year. And that was the kind of game you need to see from him as well. And if Yuri Kulik can get that out of J.J. Peterka, that's another impactful thing to say about a centerman, a young centerman, being able to draw that kind of play out of his teammates. And Peterka was the difference maker in that game.
It's been a bit of a roller coaster for Peterka this year. He starts, he has the concussion in Prague, comes back, he gets hot, starts struggling again, puts up some points, starts struggling. But you're right. The one consistent aspect to his game in a negative way has been that perimeter play. Yeah. It seems like he's been relying too much on his line mate to go get the puck and get it to him in space. Whereas, and I don't necessarily blame him. Look back to late last season when Peterka was playing his best. Thompson and Tuck were doing a lot of the work in the corners. They were going in and forechecking and creating those opportunities for Peterka. He's got to understand you're going to be asked to be a play driver. You're going to have to do more. You can't just be standing around waiting for the puck to get to you. You got to go help and get it. And he showed in that game last night he's willing to do it. The detail defensively needs to be better. He needs to stop with the careless turnovers at center ice. Like, the neutral zone has been his worst enemy, you know, the last couple of weeks, where he gets the puck and he just forces a bad play and team picks it off and goes the other way. He's played enough games in the NHL at this point. He should know what he's doing and what it takes to win in these games. I think that Lindy Ruff's been frustrated with him. He's been frustrated with himself. You could tell that some of his play has frustrated his teammates even, because, like, you should know better. You've played enough games. This team was counting on J.J. Peterka to be a 30-goal guy.
Right, and they were thinking they were going to be paying him $7 million a year starting next year. They're not now. We've learned they're not going to pay Peterka big money in the offseason. They're not going to pay Jack Quinn big money in the offseason. They're going to get bridge deals. That's about all they're getting. So that can help them going forward. But, you know, there is still time here. This is, you know, the end of January. They're going into game 48, 49 to finish this trip off. There's still 35 games left. There's a lot of impact these guys can make and a lot of impressions they can make looking toward next season. And we need to see more from J.J. Peterka. We have started to elevate his game. We had not seen that from J.J. Peterka. We saw that Tuesday night in Vancouver.
The rest of the strip is very interesting, Mike. Calgary is a team that, despite, I would say, lower expectations going into the year, they're in a playoff spot right now.
But the Sabres beat them like a drum in the Saddle Dome. The Sabres have won six of the last seven. So they make our trips up that horrendous catwalk to the press box worth it. They've won six of the last seven games.
And then, of course, Edmonton is the last stop on the trip, and no Connor McDavid.
Yeah, okay. First of all, from a personal standpoint, that's a bummer. Anytime you're playing the Edmonton Oilers and Connor McDavid's on the ice, if you like hockey, you have to love Connor McDavid. Then you get to see Connor McDavid play in Rogers Place, which is an electric new – it's a Taj Mahal of the NHL. That whole end zone of nothing but suites is just something I find myself staring at every time I'm there. But Connor McDavid deserved his suspension. You know, Connor Garland of the Vancouver Canucks deserved a holding penalty. He was just in the last few seconds of a game, and he was latched on to McDavid. I get it. That doesn't give McDavid license to cross-check the guy in the face. Now, should it have been a three-game suspension? I thought that was a tad harsh, given what we've seen otherwise this year. But I also think
– should have been two.
Yeah, I think what happened was the NHL – Department of Player Safety realized they screwed up with McDavid last week, because he gave Chris Johansson of the Minnesota Wild, he gave him the chicken wing. He gave him the chicken wing right in the head, and Marcus Johansson hasn't played since. And he got away with that, didn't get suspended for it, and the Minnesota Wild were not happy. And I think the league realized, okay, we let McDavid off the hook there. We probably shouldn't have. Now he's involved in another incident less than a week later. And they kind of threw the book at him. I think he got one game for Marcus Johansson and two games for Connor Garland, and that totaled three. And I think that's why it happened that way. And the bummer of it, if you think about it, the first game he misses is against Alex Ovechkin and the Capitals. The second game he misses is a rematch against the Vancouver Canucks. And I know the guys on the Spit and Chicklets podcast were just going berserk about how the league needed to not do that, to let them play in the rematch and have another bloodbath. I think the league did this to make sure there wasn't another bloodbath. Okay, that's why he was going to get two games, because the second game was Vancouver. I thought he would get two. He got three, which takes him out of the Buffalo game, and I think that was just the Johansson play. But, yeah, I mean, okay, that helps the Sabres out, that Connor McDavid won't be on the ice when they play the Edmonton Oilers, but you still got to have you can deal with Leon Draisaitl. Will we see Jeff Skinner on the ice this Saturday, or is he going to be a healthy scratch again?
He was back on the top line with McDavid just serving that suspension. So that's the only reason why Skinner is playing. He's going to get traded. It's just a matter of who's going to want him at this point. You've got a no movement clause. The Oilers are done with him, it seems, at this point. So Jeff has to clear whatever whomever trades for him. They need Jeff Skinner's approval. And the list is going to be extremely short. Toronto Maple Leafs, I would say, are going to be on his list, the teams he would go to.
Right.
Ottawa Senators, I bet you he would go there, but he doesn't really fit their style of play. The Montreal. Pittsburgh Penguins, Pittsburgh. Montreal, I think he would go there. Mm-hmm. He's got family in Calgary, in the Calgary area still, if I'm not mistaken. So California, Jeff Skinner loves California. I could see him. I could see him going to the LA Kings, but it has not gone as he, the Oilers, or the Edmonton media expected, Mike. And it's going to be very interesting in the coming weeks as we approach the trade deadline on where Jeff Skinner is going to play, because I don't see him staying at Edmonton based on
no, and the Oilers. The Oilers are a wagon again. They've been one of the hottest teams in the league. They won 16 out of 20 going into the game against Ovechkin. They're a team, obviously, whose goal here is to win the Stanley Cup. They got to game 7 of the final last year. They need to get over the hump and win the last game. I'm all choked up. Jeff Skinner. He's not going to help you win the last game.
He's not.
I don't know what you were thinking about.
Barring an injury to their top six, he's gone. He's not. I don't see him staying there. And it's just a very interesting matchup to end the trip, because look back at what the Sabres did in Edmonton back in March, where they were playing well and they just completely fell apart in the third period. McDavid and Draisaitl just steamrolled them, their top guy. And it was one of those moments where, like, Don Granato spent the entire next morning meeting with individual players, cousins, the younger guys on the team, trying to work through with them everything that had gone wrong. He described it as a tedious process. Well, he didn't get to see that process through. And now Lindy Ruff, a different coach leading this team, is going through a very similar process, trying to teach these guys how to close out games and win.
Yeah, a 3-2 lead in that game turned into an 8-3 loss. And that was really the night, as I watched that from afar. It was still the middle of March. That's the night I said, this team is not going to make the playoffs this year. They were only a few points out. They were still on the periphery of the race. And that was the night I said, this team is not going to make the playoffs, and this coach may be in trouble. And then
that was the first.
The five
that was goal, the first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The 5-goal disaster in the first period against Ottawa was a couple weeks later. The Oilers, you know, you cannot give the Oilers time and space, and they did that night. And kind of like Calgary, though, the Sabres played pretty well out here. They're 4-3 in their last 7 games in Edmonton as well. So it's not like McDavid and Draisaitl run over them with regularity. They've played competitively. That was really the outlier game last year, losing their 8-3. But, yeah, you're looking at now a trip where the record is 1-1. We'll see what happens in Calgary. We'll see if they can come back here with 2 or 3 wins. But no McDavid certainly cuts down your entertainment factor. It probably ups your win probability, obviously. But you know, he got what he deserved. I mean, I just think star player, we shouldn't suspend him. That has to be out the window if he commits the crime. And then he commits the second crime, and they had no choice.
Yeah, and reporters were suggesting he skipped the Four Nations tournament as retribution and payback because he got wronged. Like,
people were saying, stop talking to the media. Like, well, what are we talking about here? He did. The whole world saw what he did. It's okay.
My eyes almost rolled out of my head when I saw that Four Nations comment. It's like, guys, he cross-checked somebody in the face. It's just, it's not allowed. I'm sorry. Before we go, I think it's important to mention, Mike, one of the storylines to watch over these next couple of games is Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's usage and how different his performance has been on short rest. And it'll be interesting to see if James Reimer gets one of these 2 games at this point, right? I mean,
I thought of that too. You know, they play Boston on Tuesday at home. Luukkonen, very good in Vancouver. You know, not so good against Pittsburgh. He has struggled. If you study the numbers and look at his split stats, he has not had a good season when he had 1 day rest. And about that the other day, The issue really is, remember, the schedule is very compacted this year because there's 2 weeks off for the Four Nation tournament. So a lot of these games, not so much back-to-backs. There's a lot of back-to-backs, not an exorbitant number. There's a lot more games this year of every other day. And Lukanen's numbers every other day, he's not even over 900. And his goals against is about three. The last I looked, it was like 3.5 something.
It's bad.
Not NHL quality on 1 day rest. When he's on 2 days or more rest, he's appreciably better. So you're right. Part of me says, do you throw Reimer in one of these games next Tuesday again? You know, you could throw Reimer in there Saturday and Lukanen would have off from Thursday to Tuesday. It's a problem. He acknowledged he has to be better in that area and just in bouncing back. But the Vancouver performance was excellent. Now, I mean, I would certainly play him in Calgary, but I think it's on the table, I would say, for Reimer to get a start in Edmonton.
At the very least, it is going to be a storyline for us to watch moving forward. You know, if they give Ukko-Pekka-Luukka in these two games, if he doesn't improve in that area, something's got to give, right?
Yeah.
So I know Lindy Ruff, you know, historically, it's not trusted backup goalies.
No.
Go look at the games played with a starter compared to the backup, especially during his years in Buffalo. It was a different league back then, but that's been the trend. If he loses trust in a backup goalie, he doesn't want to play him anymore. And that really serves for any player on the roster. If you lose his trust, you're done.
Right, and you don't want to lose the trust. You don't want to lose the trust in the starting goalie, though. That's one of the issues.
Exactly.
You know, Lukanen at least has enough bounce back games. We remember when, you know, Ryan Miller played 76 games 1 year because just Lindy would not play poor Jocelyn Thibeault at all. That's out the window now. That's not going to happen. But, you know, I think that was one of the issues with calling Levi up was they didn't know if Lukanen was going to be banged up still from getting hit by Malkin. And they certainly couldn't go the whole trip with just Reimer. And so you had to give Levi a game on the back-to-back. He wasn't very good. But you kind of did that because you were forced to until you made sure Lukanen was good to go. Now Lukanen clearly, we saw in Vancouver, was good to go.
Yeah, you couldn't bring up Felix Sandstrom. I know like there was some initial reaction from fans. Why are they doing this? They shouldn't have brought him up. I get it. I'm with you. You're not starting Felix Sandstrom. It was extenuating circumstances. You had to play the guy, the second guy or third guy, whatever you want to put it. And plus, like, you're right. Like, if even if they played Reimer in Seattle, you don't know if Ukko's going to be ready the rest of the trip. You needed somebody else. So, next week, we got three home games. One of them, of course, is going to be when Rob Ray is inducted into the Sabres Hall of Fame. We'll see if they sell it out. They were really advertising it. I hope that they do, because that's going to be a really interesting night. The highlight video, having Rob at the center of it all. I hope Pete Weber is able to make the trip with the Predators for that game.
He is planning. He does not travel anymore much. He is planning on making the trip here anyway. Buffalo, Chicago, L.A., but it's Rob Ray night. And something people have to remember, by the way, 6:05 start for the Rob Ray ceremony. Okay, so you got to be in your seats by about 6 o'clock if you want to see the ceremony prior to that game. So it's going to be, you know, I think 30-minute ceremony, and then you got to have the pregame warm-up. So the Rob Ray ceremony starts at 6:05, so make sure you're there early.
And Sabres always do a nice job with those special event nights, whether it be Ryan Miller, RJ, we can keep going back. So, Mike, enjoy the rest of the trip. We'll do another one of these next week when the team's at home. I'm sure we'll talk more about Rob then. And, recap the trip, move forward. We're coming up on the trade deadline in 6 weeks, so got to start talking about a little bit of that. I'm Lance Lysowski. He's Mike Harrington. Thanks for joining us. This is Ice Time, the Buffalo News Hockey Podcast. A reminder, we're the only outlets on the road for every game. Get a digital subscription if you don't have one already. It'll be worth your time and money. Thank you again for listening to us. We'll see you guys next time. Thanks.
Express Windows is a best of 716 favorite for window and door installation. They also offer discounts for military personnel and seniors. Learn more at expresswindowsinc.com. Express Windows. Fast, easy, affordable.